This is Audible.
Alexis Audiobooks presents the unabridged recording of Crave Me, The Good Old Boys, Volume 4. Written by M. Robinson, performed by Kurt Campbell and Veronica Pace.
Prologue. Austin. I tied the belt tighter around my upper arm to stop the blood flow. Squeezing my fist every few seconds to pump up my vein, it didn't take me long to find Old Faithful. It never did. I leaned back against the old, dirty, mold-infested couch, faintly hearing Mad World by Andrew Michaels somewhere in the dark, ominous background. The lyrics immediately brought back old memories. Good times. Happy vibes. When in reality, there was anything but fucking happiness. This wasn't who I'd always been. Once upon a time, I tried to find my independence, and somewhere along the way, I found solace in the haze of dependency,
which was what led me to that place in time.
I didn't bother to take in my surroundings. It was always the same. Familiar faces that blended together and never changed. Always jonesing, always wanting, always needing, always craving. More, more, more. And never enough. It wasn't about being high anymore. The euphoric, free feeling was long gone. All that was left was the pursuit.
Day after day, I was pulled down the proverbial rabbit hole with nowhere to turn.
Always trying to escape, chasing the non-existent dragon that only led to darkness. It was too late. It had me. The addiction. A tight grasp on my soul, pushing me further and further into the black abyss. What goes up must come down. It's the law of physics, the code of life. I rode the high for as long as I could remember. I'd been so far up that there was nowhere left for me to go but straight to the bottom. All I wanted was to drown out the feeling of my entire body caving in on me, soothe the ache, throw fire on the chill, and ease the nausea. The only thing I could do to feel as if I wasn't dying was to kill myself a little more. I inserted the needle, welcoming the sting. My blood rushed in and I slowly pushed down the plunger. I wanted it to last. I always do.
It was the best fucking part.
I pulled the plunger bank out and watched with hooded, constricted pupils as my blood swirled in once again. Heaven and hell, God and Satan, love and hate.
It all blended together, forming a clusterfuck of hope and despair.
Now. Now, I squeezed my fist.
The rush.
Tingles from my fingers traveled up my arm, and then, it hits. Simultaneously, my eyes closed and my head fell back against the couch. I don't care that it's dirty. I don't care that it smells. I don't care about one fucking thing. All the misery was gone in the blink of an eye, as if it wasn't even there to begin with. All that was left was the free, euphoric, and blissful feeling of pleasure that only this could ever bring me. My heart was full, filling in the hollow existence that was my life. The pain numbed, even if it was only temporary. A few moments in time where the world faded into nothingness,
and I was swimming in an endless pool of possibilities.
Not drowning in disappointment, judgment, and regret. Not feeling like I was dead inside. Meanwhile, I just killed myself a little more. I heard echoes everywhere. Colors blended together, making it hard to focus on one thing. I blinked a few times, and just like that, I saw her face, like I always did. as if she was standing right in front of me, smiling, happy, laughing. My whole world. My girl. My lips curled up slightly at the vision as I reached out for her, wanting to touch her, needing to hold her, yearning to kiss her, craving. God, craving to fucking love her. "I'm sorry," I murmured aloud to no one but the illusion of my drug-infested mind. "I'm so fucking sorry," I repeated repentantly, longing for her to believe me, aching for her to love me again like she used to. I don't know how long I sat there, staring at her beautiful face before my eyes, subconsciously rubbing the tattooed daisy that was placed over my heart. I couldn't take it anymore, and the desire went over the haze. It was too powerful. It was too vivid. I grabbed my phone. "Baby," I said into the speaker. The ringing quickly followed, going straight to voicemail. I hung up and tried again. "Baby," I said with desperation in my tone. Still nothing. I tried again, and again, and again. I would try until the end of time if that's what it took for her to answer. To talk to me. To save me. To crave me. Time seemed to stand still as my life slowly played out in front of me, trying to balance somewhere between the light and the darkness when all I could see was gray.
"What?"
she screamed into the phone, finally answering after I don't know how many failed attempts.
"What the hell do you want now?"
"Baby," I breathed a sigh of relief.
"What do you want, Austin? Why are you calling me? We're over. I can't do this anymore."
I shut my eyes and let my mind wander, allowing it to go to another place in time where she didn't hate me. "I remember the first time I made you smile," I chuckled as if it had just happened. My nerves were on fire. The mere sound of her breathing through the phone was too intense for me. I hadn't spoken to her in such a long time. I licked my lips, my mouth suddenly dry. "I remember when you used to smile just for me. Do you remember, baby? Do you remember what my love feels like?" I heard her faintly breathing. "Do you remember my hands on you? My lips? My tongue? The first time I made you come with my mouth? Do you remember all the times since? Tell me I'm not forgotten. Tell me you remember, baby." Silence. "I love you, Briggs. I love you so fucking much. You're killing me, don't you see that? I'm dying without you."
"No, Austin, you were dying with me,"
she rasped, knowing that it killed her to say that. "The first time I saw your face, I thought to myself, damn, this beautiful girl's going to be the death of me."
"You were perfect in every way."
"I was a cocky son of a bitch who needed you then as much as I need you now." More silence. "I had a dream about you, baby. I always fucking dream about you. In my dream, you had a ring on your finger."
"A ring I put there."
"You belong to me. Only mine. Forever fucking mine."
"You were pregnant, Briggs."
"You look so goddamn happy. I saw a light at the end of the tunnel for the first time in years." She sniffed into the phone. "I made love to you. Slow, just the way you love. Taking my time to touch every last inch of your body.
Memorizing every last bit of you.
Making you come until you begged me to stop. I didn't."
"I can't,"
she tried to interject, but I didn't let up. "I kissed your stomach, our baby, letting my lips linger there.
Whispering sweet lullabies.
Letting her know Daddy will always be there. Baby, it was so real. For a second, I gave you the one thing you so desperately wanted, the one thing I can't seem to give you."
"Why are—"
"After we were done, I just lay there with you and our unborn baby, both of you wrapped in my arms, the only place where you belonged. Unforgiving thoughts plagued my mind, so I carefully moved you away from me, making sure not to wake you. I went into the bathroom and I got high. You found me. You always find me. Except this time, I died in your arms. You couldn't save me, but it didn't matter, because the best part of me was already growing inside of you. When I woke up, I was alone. I'm always alone, Briggs, even when you're near me. I can promise you the world, I can promise you a life, but even in my dreams, baby,
I'm haunted.
Jesus Christ, Austin,
she wept.
Where are you?
I opened my eyes, finally taking in my surroundings, as if I was being woken up from a dream within a dream. I couldn't tell what was real or lucid, confused by my own reality. It was then that I looked down, the needle still firmly placed in my arm.
Where are you?
She repeated with a shaky tone. I shook my head, trying to find some clarity.
I'm so fucking sorry, baby. I love you, Briggs. I love you with everything that's left of me. Austin, where are you? Please tell me where you are,
she whimpered, panic taking over. I took a deep breath and murmured,
the place I hate.
Once again, pushing in the syringe.
Briggs, I drove with my heart in my throat like every other goddamn time before this. I hated him. I loved him. I love him. I slammed on my brakes, shoving my door open before my car was even fully shifted into park. The stench of the drugged in immediately assaulted my senses, making me sick to my stomach that he was there. I ran through the abandoned warehouse that he had told me about so many damn times on my voicemail, ignoring the random junkies that were hollering at me, pleading for more drugs, begging for another hit. I tried my best to sideswipe the filth, piss, shit, and garbage all around me. I sprinted past the graffiti walls, covering my nose and mouth, trying like hell not to inhale the mold-contaminated air and decay that had taken over the shithole. Piles of trash surrounded the dirty mattresses and chairs, infested with rats and ghost-like junkies that appeared dead, but could have been alive. I knew where I would find him. He always called from the same spot, leaving me voicemail after voicemail, describing the back of the warehouse that looked over the harbor. I turned the corner and saw him, my once favorite maroon beanie placed securely on his head. I couldn't control my emotions. I hated him in that second. I despised the love I still had for him in my broken, fucked up heart in that moment. I slowed down as I got closer, my calculated steps slow and precise. I wanted to face him. I wanted to look into his eyes like I had done so many damn times before, even though I knew there wouldn't be anything but a hollow existence, a shell of the man I once knew gazing back at me. The truth was eating me alive as if I was dying right along with him. I couldn't do it. Not anymore. I stood behind the tattered couch, staring at the back of his head. He nodded off. The craving completely took over me, rotting its way into the empty space that now held his soul. I shook my head in disgust and bewilderment, with tears streaming down my face. This was all that was left of him. No more I love yous. No more I promises. No more tomorrows. No more Austin. Why? I shouted, my chest heaving and my heart breaking bit by bit. Why do you do this to me? Why do you keep doing this to me? I sobbed uncontrollably. I can't fucking do this anymore. I can't watch you die. I can't watch you kill yourself more than I already have. I bawled, my body shaking. I hate you. Do you hear me, Austin? I fucking hate you. I screamed, loud enough to break glass. Heaving, I leaned over and placed my hands on my knees for support, struggling to breathe in and out. Why do you do this to me? Please, Austin. Please. Fucking enlighten me. I'm sorry. I'm so fucking sorry. I whimpered hysterically. He didn't try to comfort me like he always did. He didn't try to hold me, touch me, kiss me or reassure me, lie to me. Nothing. I wiped my face, standing to look at him again. He hadn't moved from the place he sat. His body was lifeless. Austin, I murmured so low I could hardly hear myself. Austin, I said a little louder. My feet moved on their own accord. Inch by inch, I made my way around the couch. Old needles, bags, and God knows what else crunching under my feet. I felt as though I was having an out-of-body experience. I was there, but I wasn't. Closing my eyes, I swallowed hard before I was standing fully in front of him. Please, God, I found myself saying as I slowly opened my eyes. My body shuddered as I took in the needle that was still lodged into his vein. His eyes were closed, and his head leaned over to the side. No! I lunged into action, tearing the syringe out of his arm and throwing it as hard as I could across the place I called Hell on Earth. No, 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 I repeated, grabbing his face, making him look at me. All the color had drained from his body. His lips turned blue. Austin? I shook him. Austin! I shook him harder. Austin! I slapped him across the face. Nothing. Fuck, fuck, fuck! He wasn't breathing. Don't do this to me! Don't you do this to me again! Do you fucking hear me? Please, don't leave me. I reached for my phone. 911, what's your emergency? He's not breathing. I don't know what to do. Please, please help him. I explained as much as I could to the operator, but my thoughts were scattered. Where is your exact location? We're in the back of the warehouse, overlooking the harbor by Wallace Street and Grant Avenue. Ma'am, help is on the way. I need you to calm down. Can you do that for me? I don't know. He's not breathing. Please don't let him die. Ma'am, I need you to calm down. You can't help him if you don't calm down. I nodded, even though she couldn't see me. Ma'am, are you still there? Yes. I need you to lay him on his side with his knees bent for support. Make sure his face is turned to the side. Can you do that? I think so. I gently laid him down on the couch and did as I was told, my hands shaking the entire time. The paramedics are almost there. The rest proceeded in slow motion. Paramedics filled the vacant space, pushing me to the side, Narcan being injected up his nose, paddles shocking him back to life. One, two, three, clear! His body jolted. One, two, three, clear! His body jerked again. He's breathing, laying him on a stretcher, rushing him into the ambulance, holding his hand the entire ride. Emergency room, paperwork, insurance. Briggs? A familiar voice called out, pulling me out of my fog. I cocked my head to the side. Briggs, do you remember me? I'm Aubrey's mom. I nodded, unable to form words. They're not going to let you back there, honey. You're not immediate family. It's hospital policy. He's in good hands. I promise I will do everything I can to make sure he comes out of this alive. That being said, there's a chance he's not... He was dead for two... She placed her hand on my shoulder in a comforting gesture with hesitation, unsure how to proceed. Honey, you need to call his family as soon as possible. Time may not be on our side today. They need to be here now. I nodded again as she reassuringly squeezed my shoulder. I walked out the double doors of the emergency room, wanting some privacy. The cool breeze was a welcome feeling against my feverish face. The chaos all around me was too hard to ignore. I reached into my pocket for my phone, and it was then that I noticed I was shaking. I couldn't form one coherent thought as I dialed his number. Shame and remorse submerged me, pulling me under, making it hard to breathe. Hello? He answered. I opened my mouth to say something, anything, but nothing came out. Darlin', are you there? Dylan, I softly whispered his name into the phone. He was Austin's best friend and the only one that knew the truth. Briggs, are you all right? It's Austin, I blurted out, my voice breaking, the words causing my stomach to turn. What? It's Austin, Dylan. I found him. He called me after you did. Is he? He OD'd. He's in the ICU. They don't know if he's going to make it. I informed him, my tone sounding distant and detached. Jesus Christ, he rasped. What the fuck, Briggs? You promised me, you fucking promised me that you... I'm sorry, I wept, tears streaming down my face. I'm so fucking sorry. How did it get this bad? How has it come to this? How could you let this happen? He roared question after question, looking for answers I didn't have. I violently shook my head. I tried. I swear to God, I fucking tried. You have to believe me, Dylan. No, Briggs. You didn't. You're the reason he's there. If he dies, it's on you. Do you fucking hear me? You. I shut my eyes, my phone falling from my trembling hand, crashing to the ground. My body shuddering, knowing in my heart, he was right. It wasn't always like this. At least, not in the beginning.
Chapter 1. Austin.
Austin, there you are!
My best friend Alex called out, running towards me with a huge smile on her pretty face. Her name was Alexandra, but everyone called her Alex for short. She was only 8 years old and thought she was one of us boys, following us everywhere we went from the time she was old enough to crawl. Our half-pint shadow was our nickname for her.
What are you doing over there on the dock all by yourself?
I shrugged, not really knowing how to reply. There were times that I wanted to be by myself, alone with my thoughts where I could just let go and be me without worrying about anyone else. Where I wasn't just one of the good old boys. Of all the people I knew, Alex would understand. Sometimes I felt like we had that in common, the need to escape. It made things easier for me.
Why do you have a fishing pole if you're not fishing?
She giggled, taking a seat next to me on the dock.
What are you writing in that notebook, Austin? You can't be doing homework. You hate school.
She leaned over to see, and I casually closed it, picking up the fishing pole and casting it out in the water.
Did you walk over here by yourself, half pint?
I asked, changing the subject. She rolled her eyes.
I'm not a baby, Austin. You're 9. That's only 1 year older than me, and you walked over here by yourself.
She sassed, making me grin.
Is that right?
I know what you're thinking.
Hey, I didn't say a word. But I'm a boy and you're not, so there's that.
She narrowed her eyes at me, giving me the signature Alex glare. There was no telling her she couldn't do something just because she was a girl. If you did, she would prove you wrong the second you laid out the challenge.
Her willpower to prove her point had gotten her in trouble more times than I could count.
But it didn't stop me from picking on her, mostly because I loved getting her eyes out of her. We all did. Our eyes moved to the fishing pole, where it jolted and arched.
You got a bite! Reel it in, Austin!
She exclaimed as she bounced on the balls of her feet, clapping her hands with excitement. I did, jerking my body back every few seconds, reeling until the fish was out of the water, flapping around everywhere. I stood laying the fishing pole down on the dock, squatting down to grab its scaly body with one hand. I used the other to pull the hook from its mouth.
I bet I can catch a bigger fish than you,
Alex chimed in. I grinned again, raising an eyebrow, and stood.
Oh, yeah?
She enthusiastically nodded.
By all means, half pint,
I challenged, handing her my pole. She smiled big and wide as she removed her chucks.
The same black ones us boys started wearing instead of the pink ones her mom begged her to buy.
She took a dramatic deep breath before sitting back down with her legs dangling over the edge of the dock. Her feet swimming in the water, the exact same way I'd been sitting. I shook my head and smiled at the image. I watched with a curious gaze as she sat with the pole out in front of her,
placed between her legs, her hand ready to reel in a big fish.
Determination was written all over her face. She would beat me, even if it meant she had to stay there all day trying. Something about the way she looked in the moment inspired me. Before I knew it, I was opening my notebook, turning it to a fresh page. She didn't pay me any mind, her attention focused solely on the task at hand. I tried to capture how the lighting from the sun made the freckles on her nose more prominent and enticing. I watched as a few dark brown strands of her hair blew in the wind, the rest of it tied high on her head so she could fit in better with us. I watched the way she rubbed her lips together every few minutes, biting on her bottom one when she was done. The boy clothes she was adamant about wearing fell off her thin, tiny frame, making her appear younger than she really was. Nothing lasts forever. There would come a time when she would shed the boy clothes, not wanting to look like one of us anymore. Blossoming before our very own eyes, always wearing her long hair down with those loose-fitting dresses and flip-flops. Still a tomboy at heart. The scent of her sunscreen, which I knew she put on every morning, filled the air all around us.
I smiled, enjoying this rare time alone with her. These memories were few and far between.
I tried to capture every last detail of her, my hand running wild against the sheet of paper,
peering up at her every few seconds.
She just had this natural beauty about her. I don't know how much time went by. I was in my own little world, and I loved it when that happened. My mind would shut off for a little while, and I could live in the moment.
This didn't happen very often, even at that young of an age. I always felt older than I was. Even my thoughts were beyond my years. An old soul was what my mom called me. Maybe that's why being the youngest got to me so much. Having to try and do everything first, proving to the other boys and myself that I wasn't the last one. Regardless of how much bigger and older they were, I wasn't going to be the one left behind. It didn't stop them from trying to order me around, and as we got older, I'd tell them where they could shove it. Putting an even bigger rift between our friendship, to the point that I no longer called them my brothers, my best friends. Except with Alex. Never with her. She was what held all of us good old boys together, had been since she was born. I continued to get lost in her, my hand not stopping for one single second. I could see her frustration growing with each passing minute, not wanting to accept that defeat may be inevitable, until finally she got a bite. Her face lit up, and her body jerked forward from the force. She jumped to her feet for more leverage. I didn't stop drawing. I couldn't.
"Austin, I got one! I got a big one, too!"
she celebrated, glowing from head to toe. I laughed as she used all of her strength to reel it in. I could have offered to help her, but that would have only provoked her and she would have pushed me away. She wanted to do this on her own. I would be lying if I said I didn't want to be the cause of her happiness. The fish put up one hell of a fight. I'm surprised it didn't yank her into the water. It took her a while to reel it in, but once she did, the joy that radiated all around her was enough to make me put my pencil down and notebook aside. I stood.
"Look! Look how big! I don't think you boys ever caught one this big before!"
she shouted, jumping up and down in front of me ecstatically. "Well, I think you might be right about that one. Don't get used to that half pint," I teased. She smiled, squatting down to take out the hook exactly the way I taught her. I opened the cooler for her to stick it in next to my fish, but she hesitated and bit her lip, frowning.
"I don't think I want to keep it. I mean, it's so big. Maybe it could help one of the smaller fish fight off a big fish one day."
I chuckled, nodding. She shrugged, trying not to look embarrassed as she threw the fish back in the ocean. She turned back around to look at me, but something else caught her attention. Her eyes widened, and she gasped, looking down the picture that I just drew of her. I immediately reached down, closing and grabbing my notebook before she had a chance to snatch it. She reached out, stepping toward me.
"Austin, please let me see,"
she begged with her big, dark brown eyes gazing at me. I couldn't say no to her. None of us ever could. I sighed and handed her my notebook. No one knew this about me, not even my parents. She carefully flipped open the cover, her eyes widening once again,
as she took in page after page of the pictures I had drawn over the years.
"Wow,"
she breathed out.
"Did you draw all these?"
she questioned, peering up at me. I nodded again. She smiled, shaking her head as she looked back down, turning each and every page until she got to the drawing of her. Shock quickly replaced the smile on her face.
"Oh, wow."
She softly touched the outline of her face and then her hair on the paper, paying close attention to every detail I carefully drew.
"I didn't know you could even draw. How did I not know this? I know everything about you. Do the boys know?"
"No," I simply stated, nervously rubbing the back of my neck. She didn't know how to feel about my response. I could see it all over her expression.
"Why are you hiding this amazing talent? I mean..."
she gestured toward the notebook in her hands.
"This is such a beautiful gift, Austin. You should share it with the world."
I shrugged, not used to getting compliments or praise, especially for something I didn't want anyone to know about me. She understood my silent response, nodding and closing the notebook. She handed it back to me.
"Do you not want anyone to know?"
she asked what I was already thinking.
"Half pint. It'll be our secret."
She threw her arms around my waist.
"I promise I won't tell anyone until you say I can."
I put my arms around her, kissing the top of her head. She hugged me tighter.
"Can you promise to show me more of your drawings? Can you share your talents with me at least? Please?"
she whispered, gazing up at me. "I'll promise." She nodded, hugging me one last time before she pulled away. It was then that we heard footsteps on the wooden dock, one big thud after another. We both peered in the direction of the noise.
Bo!
Alex called out, her special nickname for him.
I've been looking all morning for you. I found Austin instead.
She pointed in my direction. He pulled her to his side and she willingly went, with love and adoration spilling out of her. I looked back up toward Lucas, and if looks could kill, I would be dead.
Briggs. Daddy, can I have this? I asked, holding a dolly with sparkling purple hair, trying to look as cute and adorable as I could. My puppy dog eyes always worked with Daddy. Your mom said no, Princess, he responded. But Daddy, I really need this. Please? Please? Pretty please? I begged, giving him the biggest pouty lip. Daisy, you already have hundreds of dolls that look exactly like that one. Mom chimed in. No, Mommy, I don't. She has sparkly purple hair, I said, raising her above my head so she could see and understand what I was talking about. She grabbed her out of my grasp, and I smiled big, thinking I won. It soon faded when she placed her back on the highest shelf that I couldn't reach. Mommy! I stomped my foot on the ground. Daisy, don't you dare throw a temper tantrum right now. You have hundreds of dolls. You don't need another one, she reasoned. Daddy! You heard your mother, baby, he soothed. I rolled my eyes. This was not the time for him to be calling me that, I grunted. I'm not a baby! Did they not understand how much I needed that doll? She didn't know what she was talking about. I didn't have any like her. It was so unfair. Ken didn't want to be with the plain Barbie anymore. He wanted to be with Sparkle Barbie. She was ruining all my plans for the wedding of the year, a huge, purple, beautiful wedding. I crossed my arms and sulked the entire way through the store as she placed one stupid item after another in the cart. Why did she get a book and I got nothing? Why couldn't she just not buy broccoli and get me my doll? I hated broccoli. Even Daddy hated broccoli. Stupid Mom. Stupid broccoli. She never let me buy what I wanted. Daddy never told me no. Sometimes I wished she wasn't around, that it was just my daddy and me. Life would be so much better if it was just the two of us. Then Mommy couldn't tell me what I could and couldn't have. My daddy and I don't need a mommy. We would do fine without her. I watched him pull out a wad of cash to pay for our groceries. There was a lot of money. We could have definitely bought my doll. She was just being mean. Daddy, please, I pleaded, tugging on the ends of his shirt. Baby, we can talk about it later. I have to go. Daddy is running late for a meeting. You don't want me getting into trouble, do you? I could see it in his eyes. He wanted to say yes, but Mommy cocked her head to the side as if she was testing him. He looked down at me and shook his head no. He grabbed my hand as we walked out to the car, but I didn't want to leave. I wanted my doll. Daddy, please. I tried again. Daisy, ya no más, Mom scolded in Spanish. Daisy, no more. I narrowed my eyes at her, giving her my angry face. He buckled me into my booster in the back seat of his car. I hated that thing. I was a big girl. Daddy told me so all the time. I didn't need to sit in a baby seat. I was 6 years old, but my mom said that I was still under the weight and height, so by law, I still had to ride in one. I think she was lying. There was no law. She just wanted me to sit in one. Daddy gave me a kiss on the forehead and told me he loved me and closed the door. He rounded the corner of the car and gave Mommy a kiss on the lips, telling her he loved her before he got into the passenger seat. I didn't want to sit behind Mommy. I wanted to sit behind Daddy. I kicked the back of her seat before she got in the car. Daddy looked down at his watch after Mommy started driving. There's no way I'm going to make this meeting. She sighed. I'm sorry, Michael. I know how important this meeting was for you. Her car had died on our way to the grocery store, so she called Daddy to come rescue us. It's my fault. I should have taken it in weeks ago. I've been so busy with this merger. I haven't had time for anything else. It's fine. I gave the tow truck driver our mechanic's address. He grabbed his phone and dialed the number. Leslie, put me through to the board. Michael, where are you? I heard someone say through the phone. I'm sorry, Dale. My wife's car broke down and I had to pick them up. Can you still make it? Mom looked over at him, nodding, making a sharp turn that caused my body to jolt to the right. Yes, I'm on my way now. In the meantime, let me bring you up to date on the building codes, he began. Mommy, I want to stay up and wait for Daddy to come home, I said, knowing he would have to go back to work. Daisy, why don't you ever make it easy on me, huh? You know you can't wait up for Daddy. You have school in the morning. We will eat dinner and do bath time. I don't want a bath. I want to take a shower, I interjected, gritting my teeth. Damn it, it's starting to pour. Mom ignored my comment. Dad pressed a button and some lights came on. No, baby. Bath time is easier on me, she added. Por favor, ya no me contestes así. Please don't talk to me like that anymore. Yes, Dale. The figures need to match the proposal. Dad kept on talking, ignoring us both. But I don't want a bath. I kicked my leg against the booster seat, hitting the back of hers. She gave me a warning look through the rearview mirror. Why couldn't she let me do what I wanted? I was a big girl. What was her problem? A bath and a shower were the same. They both got me clean. I stared out the window. I could barely make out the trees as we passed them. It really started to pour, and I could hear the drops coming down hard on the car. Oye, niña, quédate quieta, she ordered. Hey, little girl, quiet down. You will get a bath, she sternly stated. Is that a red light? Fuck, I can't see. Ooh, you said a bad word. Daddy, she's in trouble. Daisy, enough, Dad yelled at me, placing his hand over the phone. Now they were both making me mad. No, I want a shower. I don't want a bath. I'm not a baby. I don't want one. I want a shower. I don't want a bath, I screamed, kicking my leg against the booster seat over and over again, my feet slamming into the back of Mom's seat. Daisy Julissa Micho Martinez, she roared in Spanish. I swear if you say one more word. I didn't like it when she said my full name. It meant I was in big trouble. No, I don't care. Daisy, you don't talk to your mother like that. I hate you both. I really hate you. I wish you would just go away and leave me alone, I yelled, regretting it immediately. She instantly turned around and looked at me wide-eyed with a tear running down her face. I had never said that to them before. It just came out. I didn't mean it. I loved them both. I felt really bad. I was about to apologize and tell her I loved them, but I was cut off. Amari! Dad yelled out, grabbing the steering wheel. This fucking idiot! The loud crashing noise that followed made me want to put my hands over my ears as my body was thrown forward. The car spun, whipping Mommy and Daddy's bodies all around. I wanted to cover my eyes. I think I was screaming, or maybe that was my mom? My head hit something hard, and my body felt like it was on a roller coaster ride as we tumbled and tumbled and tumbled. I didn't know which way was up and which was down. For a second, I caught a glimpse of Mommy's face in the mirror, and I swear she mouthed, I love you. It all happened so fast, yet it played out in slow motion in front of my eyes. I heard glass shattering all over me, pieces flying through the air. The sound of crushing metal drowned out our screams. When we finally stopped, an eerie silence filled the car. All I could hear were raindrops hitting what was left and rumbles of thunder in the distance. I was really dizzy and tired. It was hard for me to open my eyes, but when I did, what I saw would forever haunt me. A week went by before we stood in the pouring rain, a black umbrella placed high above our heads, a man I had only just met holding it securely in place behind us. I watched the raindrops fall, forming puddles all around us, shuddering with every single drop. I looked up at the tall, big man who called himself my Uncle Alejandro, standing beside me. Mommy told me all about him. She said he was her baby brother who loved me very much, but he was a very busy man and couldn't come visit us. He always sent me gifts for my birthday and holidays, so I always believed what my mommy had said. But now I wasn't so sure. He never smiled. He didn't laugh. He barely even spoke to me. I don't think he liked me very much, but I still wanted to reach for his hand to hold it. I still wanted him to wrap his arm around me so I could hide inside his big arms and feel protected from what was happening all around us. I bowed my head in remorse and shame. Are you ready, Daisy? Uncle Alejandro's rough voice filled the air from above me. I nodded, lying. I wasn't ready. I would never be ready. It surprised me when he reached for my hand. My gaze quickly followed the length of his arm up to his cold, dark eyes that never held any expression or emotion. "The real world is a fucked up place," he said in a neutral tone out of nowhere, making my eyes widen and my head jerk back by the way he spoke to me. It didn't faze him.
"It's better that you learn that now. You can't stay a little girl forever, Daisy."
"My name is Briggs," I declared. "No more Michael. No more Amari. No more Daisy." A part of me knew he wasn't looking for an explanation. I didn't say anything as we stepped forward, taking one last look at where my parents were laid to rest, knowing I got my wish. I had put them there.
Chapter 2. Austin. All the boys were like brothers to me. We grew up together in the small beach town of Oak Island, North Carolina. Our parents were all good friends since childhood, so it was only natural that we all became best friends with one another, too. Out of all the boys, I was always closest with Dylan McGraw. I don't know why, that's just how it was. As we got older, I guess I felt like out of all of them, I could relate to Dylan the most. You could maybe even go as far as saying I looked up to him in some ways, since he was a year and some change older than me. He was 12 and I had just turned 11. He never gave a damn about what anyone thought or said about him. He would tell it straight to your face, not caring if he hurt your feelings or not. He never judged me. I wasn't saying that the other boys did, but Dylan was different. He treated me like an equal. Jacob Foster was the oldest of the boys, almost 13. That didn't stop Dylan from taking on the role of big brother to us all,
which is probably why I bumped heads with most of the boys as we got older and our balls fully dropped.
It only got worse. Jacob was the most level-headed one, and smart as hell, too, which was interesting in regards to the girl he actually ended up with. Then there was Lucas Ryder, who was only a year older than me. He was 12 going on 30, and stubborn as shit. He had a smart-ass personality, and sometimes he took it too far. We all loved to surf, but Lucas was the most skilled, constantly riding into waves that had us all questioning his decisions. We butted heads more often than not. There were times that I thought our friendship wouldn't survive it. The animosity towards each other grew more and more as the years went on. Eventually, down the long, unexpected road of life, I wouldn't exist to him anymore. We all looked out for each other in one way or another as kids. With all the time we spent together, our mannerisms and personalities crossed over from one boy to the next. It would have been rare if our traits hadn't blended together over time. Except for Alex. Alexandra Collins, our half-pint. The prettiest girl I'd ever seen. Even at the age of 10, she was wise beyond her years. There was something about her that pulled all of us boys in time and time again. Her childlike demeanor was something she never grew out of. No matter how old she got, she constantly looked at the glass as half full. Growing up, she became our confidant, biggest supporter, and best friend. We often forgot that she was a girl and wasn't just one of the good old boys like the rest of us. When shit really went down, I could always count on Dylan. Didn't matter what it was or where I was. He was there at the drop of a dime. He had my back and I had his, but over the years I took our friendship for granted. Years I couldn't get back. Years I could never change. As much as I wanted to, as much as I tried. After 4 months, we finally finished our treehouse that we had been working on all summer. We messed around with Alex, making her believe she wasn't going to be allowed up there with us, telling her it was for boys only. We even went so far as making a sign that said, "No girls allowed," written in Jacob's mom's red lipstick. Of course, Lucas was the first to cave and let her in, which was no surprise to any one of us. We decided to crash in the treehouse that night to finally celebrate it finally being done. Alex was getting her sleeping bag and pillow before we even got the last word out. It was late by the time she passed out next to Lucas. They had a special bond, something none of us could ever come close to or even begin to understand. It was much more than a bond. It was more like two souls destined to be together, a deeper level of love for each other, and not just in the friendship kind of way. Lucas and I had our issues, but I would be lying if I said I didn't envy him when it came to her. I think we all did in our own ways.
She asleep?
Dylan asked, nodding toward Alex.
Yeah,
Lucas replied, pulling up the blanket on her shoulder.
I can't believe she found the magazines,
Jacob groaned.
You think she'll rat us out?
I laughed. Nah, just don't piss her off anytime soon.
What the hell did you think was going to happen? I told you not to bring him up here. That was not me,
he pointed to himself.
It was that fucker over by you.
Dylan grinned.
Please, I was doing you dickwads a favor. I'm the only one that's actually seen a pair of tits in real life. Your moms don't count, I joked.
Go fuck yourself, Austin.
I laughed even harder, my head falling back.
Just saying, brother.
Yeah, and I'm just saying you can go fuck yourself,
he chuckled back.
You know better than to mess with Dylan's manhood. The boy's been kissing girls since our playground days in grade school,
Jacob chimed in.
Someone had to show you pussies how it was done.
We all laughed, looking over at Alex to make sure we hadn't woken her up. It was rare not to have her prying ears listening to everything we said. We tried our best not to say vulgar things around her, but we were just boys. Things slipped out of our mouths all the time. She was innocent and a true lady. Her mommy did right by her, and it shocked the shit out of all of us that our filthy mouths never rubbed off on her, especially as we got older and cuss words became a thing of the norm. Oh, and getting laid, let's not forget about that one.
Hey, I'll give credit where credit is due. My boy Austin here has already tongue-kissed a girl,
Dylan said, proudly squeezing my shoulder. A few weekends before, we had gone to a girl named Stacy's birthday party. Well, all of us but Alex. She never went to any parties. We ended up playing Spin the Bottle out on the beach while her parents were back inside. It was my turn to spin the bottle, and it landed on Kimberly. She had braces and cut my lip. I lied to my mom, telling her I bit it surfing.
What have you done with a girl, Lucas? Jack shit,
Dylan knowingly added.
I'm sorry I have standards and won't make out with anything that just has tits and ass, Dylan.
He shrugged.
You forgot curves and blonde hair. I like that shit, too. Does it have to be longer than yours?
Jacob goaded. Dylan had blonde hair down to his shoulders since he could walk. We all made fun of him for it. He looked like a damn girl, but they loved it.
Just enough for me to grab on to something,
he mocked, moving his hands up and down above his dick.
Oh, bullshit, you haven't gotten ahead,
I called him out.
Yet,
he arrogantly countered.
I know what I want out of life.
A girl? Lucas asked, surprised.
Pussy,
he simply stated. We heard the rustling of a sleeping bag. Our heads simultaneously turned to where Alex was lying. She must have rolled over. She was still sound asleep. When she was out, there was no waking her up.
Which is more than I can say for you,
Dylan challenged, whispering to Lucas.
What's that supposed to mean? Lucas answered, taken aback.
What do you want out of life, Bo?
Dylan baited.
Fuck off, he sneered.
All the boys laughed except for me. Lucas didn't think anyone was watching as he longingly gazed down at Alex, knowing that all he ever wanted was her. I bowed my head, silently praying they didn't ask me what I wanted out of life. There was no way in hell I could give them an honest answer.
Briggs, 2 years had gone by since I killed my parents. They say that when you experience trauma, a drastic, life-altering change, you're suddenly forced to grow up, become wiser beyond your years. Mature in ways that didn't make sense except to the people who may have experienced similar events. I knew that was the case with me. I was 8 years old and living with my Uncle Alejandro in New York. I had been taken away from everything I had ever known and was brought here, in a city full of buildings and no one to talk to. Home. He moved me across the country to start a new life, a life much different than the one back home in Washington. No warmth. No happiness. No love. I had a life back there. I had everything I could ever ask for. I lived in a home full of love and laughter. Pictures lined the walls of my home. The fridge was covered with my drawings. Daisies were always on our table. My family. I had none of those things here. No friends. No family. No parents. Uncle Alejandro hired a nanny to take care of me, but all she did was cook my meals, clean my clothes, and watch over me. She smelled funny and didn't say much. My driver, Esteban, was the only person who was actually nice to me and paid me any attention. He looked young and had been assigned to protect me. Uncle Alejandro used the word bodyguard, but I didn't really understand what that meant or why I needed one of those, so I didn't dare question him about it. My uncle had blue eyes like my mom, but that's where their similarities ended. She always told me he was her baby brother, and he looked really young, too. He was tall, so tall that it hurt my neck every time I had to look up at him. I was told I had to look him in the eyes, especially when he was talking directly to me. I was to do the same when answering him and only talk when spoken to. He didn't explain why, and I was once again too terrified of him to ask. He was built much bigger than my daddy, taking up almost the entire doorway when he walked through it. They were Colombian, and he spoke with a slight Spanish accent, even though my mom didn't. His brown hair went past his ears, and it was always slicked back, away from his face that also had hair on it. He wore nothing but suits with shiny black shoes that echoed down the halls in the penthouse. I barely ever saw him, and when I did, it wasn't for more than a few minutes. He always made it seem as if he had something better to do than pay any attention to me. My mom lied. Uncle Alejandro didn't love me. Not even a little. I was there because I had to be, not because he wanted me there. He didn't have to say it for me to know it was the truth. There were times that I overheard him speaking in Spanish, thinking I didn't know what he was saying. Little did he know I was bilingual. Since I was a baby, my mom had spoken to me in Spanish and my dad in English. It was an ongoing joke in our family about how mom would speak in Spanish only when she was talking about dad, because he didn't understand what she was saying. She would pick on him and call him a white boy, and he would always reply that she was his Latin queen. I smiled at the thought. I only smiled when I thought about them. Thinking about my mommy and daddy made my heart ache. It hurt so bad that sometimes I couldn't breathe. I was drowning in the misery I created, getting sent here as a punishment for killing my parents. Sentenced to a life of being alone. I had no one else to blame but myself. It was all my fault. I woke up every night from nightmares and had no one to comfort me, no one to hold me and tell me that everything was going to be all right. No one to tell me they loved me. That's what hurt the most. I had all of that before, but I wished them away. It only took a few minutes for my life to be ripped from me. I shook my head, trying to push away the images of my parents and the last time I saw them. It didn't matter. I didn't feel safe in the house that was not known as my home. I cried a lot. I cried more times than I could count. Daisy? Esteban shouted, walking onto the back porch that overlooked the city of Manhattan. It was the only place I felt like I wasn't dying. The lights of the oversized buildings resembled twinkling stars. I hadn't seen real stars since Washington. I quickly wiped away my tears, not wanting him to see me cry. There you are. I've been looking all over for you, he added, stopping when he caught me wiping my face. Are you okay? I nodded, looking down at my hands that were now placed in my lap. I heard footsteps and assumed he left like I knew my uncle probably would have. I was surprised when I felt him softly grip my chin, making me look up at him. It was the first time I realized how kind his eyes were. They reminded me of my dad's, which only made my eyes fill up with more tears. Hey, it's okay, he soothed, crouching down and pulling me into his arms. It was the first time anyone had hugged me in such a long time. The first time anyone showed me any kindness or love, any sympathy. I leaned into his embrace, soaking it up as much as I could, knowing that it wouldn't last long, and silently praying that it wouldn't be the last time someone would hold me and try to make me feel better. Why are you crying? He asked, rubbing my back every few seconds to reassure me that it was okay to tell him. To talk to him. To trust him. I couldn't take it anymore, so I just let go. I cried, long and hard for I don't know how long. He didn't let go or push me away. If anything, he held me tighter, letting me sob for as long as I needed, whispering reassuring words to help ease my pain and the hurt I felt in my heart. I miss my parents, I finally let out, bawling even harder. I miss my parents so much, Esteban. I can't breathe. I'm suffocating. I don't think I'll ever be able to breathe again. My heart hurts so much. It hurts so much every day. I sobbed, unable to control my emotions and needing to tell someone. To have them understand that I wasn't a bad child. I just made a mistake, a brutal mistake that cost me my parents' lives, the only love I'd ever known. I know, Pequeña, he murmured, catching me off guard. I sniffled, sucking in a few breaths before I pulled away, wanting to look at him. I didn't bother to wipe my tears. He had already witnessed me breaking down and held me in his arms. I could see my fresh tears wet all over his nice black suit jacket. I immediately felt bad. You know? I coaxed, sucking in a few more deep breaths. He cocked his head to the side with a sincere, sad smile for me. I know. I bowed my head. It's okay. I understand. I lost my parents, too. That made me look back up at him. I was around your age when it happened. It took me years to recover, but I promise it does get easier as time goes on. He spoke honestly. I could tell by his soft blue eyes. I wanted to ask him what happened to his parents. I wanted to ask him if he ever felt whole again, if he ever felt love or happiness, if he ever felt safe. Something told me that he did. His eyes spoke for themselves, and they answered all of my questions, which only gave me hope that someday I might have that again. And for an 8-year-old girl, that meant everything. Yeah, was all I could bear to say, even though there was so much more that I was feeling. Something told me that he knew, as if it was radiating off of me. He affectionately smiled and wiped away a few of my tears before grabbing the handkerchief out of the front pocket of his suit jacket and handing it to me. I blushed as I took it, all of a sudden feeling shy. He stood and I followed his lead, feeling even smaller than I already was. Hey, he coaxed, reassuringly squeezing my shoulder. I cry sometimes too. Shit happens, Daisy, whether we want it to or not. I immediately peered up at him again. No one spoke to me like that besides my uncle, as if I was an adult and not a little girl. For some reason, in that moment, with him, by ourselves, it made me feel better. I smiled for the first time since my life drastically changed. And it wasn't from the memories of my parents, at least not that time.
Chapter 3, Austin. The more things changed, the more they stayed the same. A year went by, and it was already summer break again. The boys and I did our usual shit, except now, girls started to hang out around us more often. The older I got, the more I started to shed my red hair and freckles from my Scottish heritage on my mom's side. I started to look more like my dad. My hair got darker, but you could still see an auburn haze running through it in the sun, which only made my bright blue eyes stand out more. For some unknown reason, girls really seemed to like that. Not that I was complaining. My skin evened out, or maybe it was from all the time I spent in the ocean and sun, surfing and riding bikes. It was rare to find any of us indoors for very long. We all knew it bothered Alex to share us with all those girls, even though she wouldn't admit it out loud. In a few short months, she would be attending middle school with the rest of us. It was the other boy's 8th year and my 7th. It was easy to spare her feelings when she went to a different school, but it was only a matter of time until she realized that we were all growing up. Seeing things she may not want to see, experiencing things she may not be ready for. I hated the fact that she might feel like she was getting left behind and didn't fit in anymore, experiencing it firsthand. We were all aware of Lucas and Alex's connection. It wasn't hard to miss. You would have to be a damn idiot to not notice it. I knew the boys were the real reason why Lucas finally asked Stacy out. A girl that had been pretty much on his balls for a while now. Lucas had his asshole ways like we all did. But he would never purposely hurt Half Pint. And this would destroy her. So, when Jacob suggested that we walk on the beach to go to Alex's parents' restaurant, a place we all hung out at since birth, it didn't take long for me to put two and two together. Instead of calling him out on it to protect and look out for her like I should have, I went along with it, mostly because it was easier that way, even though it didn't take away the piece-of-shit feeling that came along with it.
Jacob and Dylan hated the mere thought of them having feelings for each other other than friendship.
And that was where it all started. The rift between us all. Particularly for Lucas and Alex. I saw them from a mile away, and if I saw them, I knew the rest of them did too, especially Half Pint. They didn't try to turn the other way and leave. We just kept on walking toward them. They were on a secluded part of the beach, and the full moon only added to Lucas and Stacy dry-fucking the shit out of each other on the sand. I watched Alex's face the entire time, the way her heart just broke into a million pieces, spreading out all over the sand for us to walk right over it. Jacob and Dylan didn't look at her once. They knew what they were doing. They wanted her to see it. In their eyes, they thought they were doing her a favor, blatantly showing her that Lucas wasn't good enough for her and didn't give a shit about her. Bottom line, it was fucked up.
"Damn, boy! Get up in there all good-like and shit!"
Jacob interrupted as Lucas's hand went roving under Stacy's shirt. His body instantly jolted off of hers, standing.
"What the hell, Jacob?"
Lucas roared, spinning around to give him shit. I watched the entire thing play out in front of me like it was a goddamn soap opera. All the fight in Lucas immediately died the second he saw Alex with her head bowed and her shoulders slumped forward. A kicked puppy. And it took everything inside of me not to beat the living shit out of all of them for putting her through this, for showing her that life was cruel, bursting her bubble that we were her boys. Especially Bo. I could tell that Lucas felt awful, but at the end of the day, he didn't know that he was in love with her. He was a kid trying to be a man. A guy. We're fucking idiots. Alex always knew. She just tried to deny it, maybe knowing that he could never really be hers, and that I understood more than anything or anyone.
"Relax,"
Dylan interjected, bringing Lucas' pissed-off glare back to him.
"We're just passing through, heading up to Half Pint's restaurant for dinner."
"By all means, keep going."
Dylan reached out for Alex's hand, and she quickly took it, her eyes locked on the sand, not looking at anyone, particularly not Lucas. Dylan nodded toward Stacy, who was still sitting there, unfazed by getting caught.
"Bye, darling,"
he added as we walked off. As I got older, it was harder to control my emotions, my anger most of all. For the first time in our friendship, our brotherhood, I allowed it to completely take control, not giving a damn about the outcome or the consequences.
"I'm going to use the bathroom,"
Alex whispered, barely loud enough for us to hear as we walked up to the restaurant. Dylan nodded, letting go of her hand, and we stayed by the shoreline. I was the only one to actually watch her leave, making her way up the beach into the restroom, where I knew she would probably be crying her eyes out, proving to herself that she really was just a girl. Before I could give it any more thought, I turned around with my fist already in the air and punched whoever the hell was closest to me straight in the jaw. It just happened to be Dylan. He staggered backward, his grip firmly placed on the side of his face. Neither one of them batted an eye. It was as if they were both expecting it, maybe even a little proud of the fact that I was defending our girl from the hurt they knew they caused. Dylan spit blood onto the sand and peered up at me. Jacob followed his gaze, both of them standing tall in front of me, with expressions I couldn't quite place.
"You're both fucking assholes,"
I gritted out through clenched teeth, with my fists still at my sides.
"No shit, Austin,"
Dylan rounded, shaking his head in disgust.
"What the hell are we supposed to do? Watch him hurt her anyway? This was easier, all right? Like ripping off a damn Band-Aid."
"That was fucked up, and you know it,"
I argued, stepping forward until I was an inch away from their faces.
"That wasn't fair to either of them. You set them up."
Jacob sighed.
"Austin, you're too young to understand."
"Fuck you,"
I roared, only glaring at him.
"You can pretend all you want that this scheme you orchestrated was the right thing to do.
But you don't fool me. Lucas wasn't the one that hurt her."
I stared back and forth between them. "It was you," I said, receding my steps, needing to get away from them.
"Both of you."
I turned and left. Alex was already walking out the front door of the restaurant by the time I made it inside. I ran, grabbing her wrist, making her spin to face me. She immediately gazed down at the ground.
"I don't feel so good. I must have eaten something. My stomach hurts. My mom's going to take me home,"
she murmured just above a whisper.
"Half Pint," I coaxed.
Something in the tone of my voice made her peek up at me through her wet, spiky lashes. Neither one of us said anything. We just stood there in the parking lot of the restaurant in silence, knowing words didn't have to be spoken. She knew. I pulled her toward me and she willingly came. She wrapped her arms around my torso, tucking her head underneath my chin. I held her tight against me, opening my mouth to say something, anything. Nothing came out. I kissed the top of her head instead. I love you, Half Pint. I'm always here for you, I reminded her.
I know. I love you, too.
She was the first to pull away, shyly smiling.
You ready to go, baby?
Her mom asked, walking up with Lucas's mom and baby sister, Lily, beside her. She nodded.
Hey, Austin. Jesus, boy, you get bigger every time I see you. To think you used to be the smallest one,
her mom chuckled.
The boys are inside playing pool. I'm sure they're waiting for you.
I smiled. Lily just stared at us with a gleam in her eye. Even at the age of 6, she was smarter than all us boys put together.
I'll see you later, Austin,
Alex said. I watched them leave, knowing that the next time I saw her, she wouldn't be the same girl.
Briggs, can I play too? I asked the boy with a friendly smile. My uncle had changed my school once again. In 3 years, I'd been to 4 different schools. I would start at one and be moved to the next with no warning. He never gave me an explanation, just that I would be attending a new school. Not that it mattered. It wasn't like I made any friends. No, he simply stated. I frowned. Why? I was a nice girl. My mom and dad told me all the time. My teachers back home all loved me, and I had lots of friends. Because you're that new girl, Daisy, and my parents said that I can't play with you or talk to you. I'm supposed to pretend you don't exist. I jerked back, surprised by his response. I peered at all the kids that were standing around him, looking at me with the same expression. They were playing dodgeball, which happened to be my favorite game. I was really good, too. I could help them win, since they weren't doing a great job at that. None of us are allowed to talk to you. You should just go back to where you came from, because we don't want you here. You're a bad apple, he shouted, too close to my face. I don't know what came over me, but fury rose from deep in my belly and my skin burned all over. Before I knew it, I was raising my fist and punching him right in the nose. My eyes widened, shocked by my own outburst. I didn't have a violent bone in my body. I instantly felt awful when he leaned over and blood came gushing out of his nose. It was the first time I didn't use my words like my parents had taught me. Shame replaced the angry feeling that had just taken over me in that moment. This wasn't who I wanted to be. My parents would be so disappointed in me, and that alone made me feel worse. I heard some of the kids gasp, and then others went running towards the teachers. I was going to be in so much trouble. I'm sorry, I blurted out, scared of the repercussions from my uncle. Please don't get me in trouble, I pleaded, trying to help him, but he shoved my hands away. I'm going to tell everyone. You shouldn't be here. You don't belong in this school. Your family, they aren't good people. That's what my parents told me. That's why we're supposed to stay away from you, and you just proved them right. I fervently shook my head. That's not true! I'm a good girl! I'm sorry! I yelled back, hoping he would understand. Get away from me! Daisy! Miss Anderson scolded, running up to us. I saw you hit him, young lady. That is not acceptable behavior. You need to come with me to the principal's office. I bowed my head, tucking my chin up against my neck. The tears were already forming in my eyes as I trailed behind her to face my punishment. Except in that situation, the principal wasn't who I was concerned about. They called my uncle a few times to no avail. The principal said I was suspended for a week. There was a zero fighting tolerance, and my behavior would not be accepted at the school. I pleaded with him to give me another chance. I tried to tell him that this was the first time I had ever acted out like this, but he wouldn't let me explain. He didn't care that I wasn't the one who started it, or that the boy was being mean to me. Esteban picked me up shortly after. The school must have called him when my uncle didn't answer. They handed him an envelope with a letter that explained I wasn't allowed back on school property for an entire week after telling him what happened. Embarrassment couldn't even begin to describe how I felt about the whole situation. I gazed out the window the entire ride back to the house that wasn't my home. Never had been, never would be. I could sense Esteban stare through the rearview mirror a few times, but I ignored every last glance. Well, if it isn't my little fighter. Uncle Alejandro's rough voice filled the foyer when I walked into the penthouse. I immediately...